You're listening to The Profile.
Welcome to the Leadership Special, a show which features conversations with Christians in leadership about the topics that really matter. I'm Andy Peck, your host, and I've had the privilege of interviewing Christian leaders on over 1,000 shows, and so hope you'll enjoy this next conversation and will join us again next week.
The Leadership Show with Andy Peck.
It's my joy to welcome you to another conversation aiming to support and encourage Christians who lead. On this show, we champion those who take initiative in leadership. And we have a wonderful example of this today. This new venture is entitled Counselling Carers, and it has as its strapline, improving the lives of the most vulnerable by caring for their carers. So I'm joined by Jenny Piller, the founder and clinical director, and Rich Gower, the managing director, who was on the show in the summer of 2024 as co-author of The Hopeful Activist, Discovering the Vital Change You Were Made to Bring. So his work in this venture is putting into practice what he teaches in that book. So welcome, Jenny, to the Leadership Show.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
And welcome back to Rich.
Hey, Andy. Lovely to be back.
So perhaps we could start, Jenny. Tell us the story. It's said that leadership is provoked when people say, I want to see change, and they set out to do something. So what provoked you?
So this was very much about my personal story. I trained as a therapist in my mid-20s, and I had quite an interest then in foster care and adoption and supporting parents therapeutically with their children. And I'd kind of had this idea, or maybe in the future I'll do something along those lines. And it was very much brought to a head in 2014 when my daughter was born and had quite complex health needs. And I suddenly found myself in this position where I was a carer and nobody was asking how we were doing as parents with this child who had all these complex health things going on. And I had a look around and I thought, oh, is there an organisation somewhere that offers therapeutic support to parents? And I realised that there wasn't. And I'd had this previous idea about kind of foster carers and adopters being the ones who needed support. And suddenly my eyes were open to like, oh, goodness, there's all these parent carers out there. And then so much bigger than that. There's people looking after elderly relatives with dementia, people whose spouses have had accidents, all sorts. And I realised what a difference it would have made for me to have had therapeutic support and that there wasn't anything out there. So I felt really provoked. Like, well, I've got the skills. I'm already a therapist. What could I do? And I'm sure there's probably people listening in who are in the midst of a caring situation who are thinking, goodness, I can relate to that. There's nobody out there asking me how I am. And well, we exist for you. Counselling Carers is there for precisely the people who are needing that support.
Fabulous. And Rich, how did you get involved?
So around this time, as you might remember from our past interview, Andy, I was involved with the Hopeful Activists, leading this organisation, all about helping people uncover what God had put at their core, what was their calling, what is God asking them to do in the world to bring his kingdom and make a difference. And in the midst of that, Jenny came to me, and we'd been friends for a while. We were actually separated for talking at primary school. So we'd known each other a long time.
Okay.
But we were in different parts of the country. I think we'd met up for a walk and it was New Year. And Jenny was sort of describing this idea. I could see it was a really excellent idea. So it was quite encouraging. Fast forward 6 months, 9 months, and it's like, I'm doing this now. Could you be involved? Could you be on the board? I was very busy at the time, but Jenny twisted my arm. I could see, you know, it was such a valuable initiative. So I joined as a non-executive director at the start. And then, as you'll hear in a minute, it really took off. And so just over a year and a half ago, I got involved to help Jenny run it a couple of days a week.
Wonderful. Well, I think this in 20 years, this may be a first in terms of having people on the show who knew each other at primary school. So well done. Jenny, I said earlier that on this show, we like to champion those who believe God is calling them to change things. But of course, it's not easy. So at some point, decisions have to be taken. You had this idea, but you then have to structure things so that they're sustainable. Many activities cannot be done part-time, and so you have to ask questions about how to fund it. So talk me through the options you faced and what you ended up deciding.
So as we looked at it, there was very much this sense of there were three options for us. We could be a charity, we could be a business, or we could be a social enterprise. And to be honest, a lot of the charity work out there is quite bleak in terms of funding. It's very difficult to get sustainable funding. And so we thought, actually, although we really want to reach people who are unpaid, who might not be able to afford our service, we don't want to just rely on charitable funding. But we also don't want to just be a for-profit business. So we decided to set ourselves in that social enterprise space. So we're actually a community interest company. So it means we can make some profit, but we put all of that back into subsidy for people who can't afford to have sessions. And we also can apply for grants. So we've got a kind of mixed bag in the hope that actually that helps us to build a sustainable enterprise over time. We're not directly a Christian organisation, but this was very much born out of our desire to kind of serve God and see positive change in people's lives.
Yeah, I've been involved in a couple of charities, social enterprise, well, more than a couple, quite a few. And it's very exciting to be involved in something where it is actually possible for it to pay for itself and you're doing something good in the world. That isn't possible with, you know, every cause, but that's something we have managed to build at Counselling Carers. It hasn't been easy. You know, we had some crucial grant funding early on. Grants still help us reach more people. But at its core, we've got a scalable model now where we can partner with charities, carers, organisations, and where we make a profit, it goes into reaching even more people who wouldn't be able to afford counselling. So it's exciting. It has, when you talk about these things, it always sounds, you know, like it was simple and easy, but this was several years of hard graft, and particularly for Jenny in the early days, money was very, very tight. It's going well.
And for those unfamiliar with social enterprise operations, are you able to give me a sort of brief thumbnail sketch of how that functions?
Yeah, so we a community interest company is a particular form of organisation that's relatively new in English law. And basically you have a purpose, a community purpose, so you're not just about making money. So for us, that's supporting carers. And then all of the profit we make is reinvested in that mission. So we're not a charity. We don't have trustees. We have a sort of business set up with directors, but the business exists to meet this purpose and the profit is reinvested in doing that. So it's a bit more flexible than the charity model. There are some disadvantages as well in terms of tax and things I won't bore you with, but it gives us flexibility to operate as a business, still apply for grants, so long as we exist to pursue this purpose.
Okay. Excellent. So, Jenny, it can be a costly business setting something up, not just the financial side, which we've just spoken about, but in terms of emotional energy and in terms of maybe spiritual attack. I don't know. So tell us about how that was in terms of the setting up of this key ministry.
Yeah, I mean, if I'm honest, it is still the finance that causes the most stress.
Okay, sure.
But actually, by and large, it has been a huge privilege, actually, to do something with one of my greatest friends that we're absolutely passionate about, that makes a real measurable difference to people. And so I feel like actually some of the balance of that cost is quite good. Like, actually, there's some really good payoffs for doing this just on a personal level. And actually, we're really clear together that we want our ethos to be very balanced. We want to have good life work balance, work-life balance. All of our counsellors have lived experience of care as well. And so it's really important to us. We are a mental health organisation. We want to champion people looking after their mental well-being. And so we really want to model that within the structure of our team. So we're people who will say, well, actually, don't take on more than you can manage. If you can't cope with all the things on your workload, how can we carry that for each other? How can we carry that for other members of our team? Because we want to model something different.
Sure. So, yeah. Rich, I mean, I'm going to say, Rich, I mentioned that you are co-author of The Hopeful Activists, Discovering the Vital Change You Were Made to Bring. And indeed, you headed up a ministry with that similar sort of title. You've interviewed many people, particularly for the book, but also in your work. How does this initiative compare with those other kinds of activism?
I think there are as many types of activism as there are activists.
Right,
fair enough. Lots of ways. And I think this is obviously kind of really seeing a need and then setting up something that meets that need. So we're not advocating to government to meet the need. We're setting something up to directly meet it. So You know, it's different to advocacy. It's more like setting up a local community project. So you can obviously group things. But I suppose the thing I'd say is that it really, this organization is a reflection of who Jenny is. And one of the things we talk about in the book is uncovering, you know, what God has put at your core, the unique reflection of the image of God that you carry, which is a bit different to what other people carry. And then living out of that, and then that, you know, that produces the thing that maybe you're called to do in the world. So this organization feels like it has that unique reflection of Jenny in it, with a bit of, you know, input for me now as well. I suppose the other thing I'd say, and it's sort of touching what Jenny said about, you know, the sacrifice compared with the privilege of doing it, is that in the book we wrestle with this idea of, you know, we're called to sacrifice as Christians. You know, take up your cross and follow me. But Jesus also says, I've come that you may have life and have it in all its fullness. And how do we hold those, that tension together? And I think what I found talking to lots of different activists walking that path is that there is both a kind of sense of real freedom in following that specific calling, and a sense of, I'm doing what I was made to do. There's a sort of release, a sense that you're coming alive. You know, one of the advisors to Martin Luther King said, you know, don't ask what the world needs, ask what makes you come alive. Because what the world needs is people who are fully alive. So there's that sense of being fully alive, but there's also an element of sacrifice to it. I mean, I know that Jenny would be earning a lot more if she was working in other areas of therapy that she does in her other time. And, you know, the same for me. And so, you know, we, in our other works, we're both time, you can earn a lot more money. So there is an element of sacrifice. But there's also a sense of, this is who we're made to be, and we're walking that road. And I see that with lots of activists. There's sacrifice, but it's blended with this sense of feeling fully alive.
Mm, that's well put. Jenny, you've gone from being a practitioner, where you're kind of concerned for yourself and the work you're doing, to leading others, to involving other counsellors. How have you found that?
I think for me, it's been quite a natural next step. I think I've always been someone who takes a lead in things. I'm sure when Rich and I were separated for talking, it was probably natural. If there's a challenge out there, I'm the kind of person who's likely to step up and say, let me be in charge of this. So it very much felt like it fitted who I was, my personality. But at the same time, I'm also still very much a practitioner as well. I try to do quite a lot of therapy hours still myself, so that when I am working with the team, I'm not doing it as kind of a management figure. I'm doing it as someone who's very much doing the same job as they are and trying to kind of lead us all forward so that we're moving together.
And in terms of who you work with, a mixture of Christians and non, how does it all work? And what sort of time are they giving to the operation?
So we're very much an organisation for all faiths and none. Quite a few of our staff are Christians, but not all of them by any means. And same goes for our clients. We are there for absolutely anybody who's a carer, whatever their faith background might be. Sometimes it can help if you know that you're talking to somebody who actually understands your faith. And I think a lot of our clients have come to us and found that very helpful. But we're a real mixed team. And we just try to make sure that we're always on the same page in terms of offering the best support we possibly can therapeutically. We work with a huge range of organisations. So some of them are carer-specific organisations who are referring people in to us. Some of them are just literally finding us on the internet. We've got some organisations that are dedicated to a specific aspect of care, whereas others are more general. And then we get lots and lots of word of mouth referrals as well, because somebody will hear, oh, goodness, I had this really amazing experience. They'll talk to somebody else about it and they want to have the same kind of support and therapeutic input. And we've found over time we tend to keep measurements of what people's mental health is like when they come in and when they leave us after a series of sessions. And we've got about 90% of the people who come to us have a measurable improvement in their mental health and emotional well-being after a series of therapy sessions with us. So, you know, there's a reason that people talk about how good it's been to their friends, because that is a huge difference. And it's not something you tend to see in lots of other mental health organisations. And we actually find that a lot of people are also very high in terms of their distress levels. Probably 80% of our clients are in the top 10% of psychological distress in this country. So it's a very difficult landscape when you're caring for somebody. It triggers all sorts of things. And we really want to be able to support that.
And in terms of how counsellors find you, people that you work with, they give a proportion of their time maybe to your counselling, or do they do full-time? How does it all work out for them?
And everyone is part-time with us at the moment. So most carers will be doing other work or private practice, therapists often call it. And then they're also working with us for a portion of their week. One of the things that we've been really strong on, it was a key value for Jenny from the early days, is that this is an organisation that's been set up by a carer, by Jenny, and we want it to be run by carers. So all of the therapists have lived the experience as a carer themselves at some point in their life. So they've walked the same road or a similar road as that being walked by the people they're talking to. And for that reason, all of our therapists are doing this work because they're passionate about it. They've experienced it. They see this as something they want to be offering. Again, for them, they could almost certainly be earning a lot more money going and counselling, sports stars or whatever, whoever else needs therapy. But this is a real need in our society. And I think when you open that window, if you've been a carer or you've had a friend that's a carer and you see the reality, then you understand this is something that's worth spending my time on.
And there are different, obviously, therapeutic methodologies. So you'll have a range of those, presumably, in those who do the counselling.
Yes, so we try to be relatively hands-off, actually, with our therapists in terms of how they do counselling, because they will have all had quite different training. And actually what we found is it doesn't make a huge amount of difference, because what's really important is that relationship, having somebody who walks alongside you and says, I see you, I get your struggle, I'm here with you. And so, yeah, we're open to kind of all kinds of different things. We've had some people who are CBT specialists, some people who are more person-centred, as long as actually what they're interested in is that moment of connection and relationship and walking alongside somebody, then that's what matters to us.
So any new venture requires a vision of a better future. That's kind of one of the cardinal elements of leadership, I guess, or certainly new ventures. How close are things now to the future that you'd envisaged when you started things off? Maybe I'll start with you, Jenny.
So when I first started, I had this idea that I was like, oh, this would be amazing. Let's have nationwide mental health support for all carers. And counselling carers can be the go-to organisation. And everybody will know, oh, if I'm a carer, I can go to counselling carers and I will get support. But obviously the moment from going as a single therapist to a huge organisation like that, I was like, oh, I don't quite know how we're going to get there. And I was actually quite taken by surprise by how quickly it took off, because within 6 months, I had a waiting list. I was like, I'm going to have to recruit other people. I can't possibly do this on my own. But I think without Rich, I'd probably still be sitting there with about four people going, how are we going to cope with all these people who need help? And Rich has been the one who's really consolidated some of that and thought about how we can take it broader to bigger organisations. And so from my perspective, I feel like we're much closer to that future that I envisaged than we could ever have been if I'd been doing this on my own.
And that is obviously a key learning for those listening who might anticipate a new venture, is that they will have perhaps skills and gifts that relate to why they want to do things, but they may not have the skills and gifts that will mean that they can have a sustainable operation. Rich, talk to me about your hopes for the future now that you've consolidated things.
Yeah, I really echo that point about recruiting people to advise you and expertise you need. I mean, we recently recruited another board member, Steve, who has been involved in some really big businesses. And so he understands how to scale things, how to set up systems. And it's great to understand what you're good at, but also where you need other people to help, and then recruit people to advise you on that. But yeah, so in terms of visions for the future, I think the key thing is we want emotional support, well-being support, to be available to every carer. Now, it doesn't just need to be us that's providing that, but we want this to be something that as a society we recognise is important and we make provision for supporting those that care for the most vulnerable. So if we can play a role in bringing that about as counselling carers, both by providing support ourselves, but also just trying to change the conversation by actually providing this and talking to carers organisations, the NHS and others, just start to change that conversation in society, that'd be amazing. And obviously, if people are listening to this and they want to partner with us, we would love to hear from them, whether they're working in carers organizations or elsewhere. If they're a carer that needs support, you know, we exist for them. You know, they can get in touch on counsellingcarers.org. And if people want to support us, then they can do that as well. Every little helps. But yeah, I think that's the vision. It's about changing the attitude in society, ultimately, isn't it? And yeah, that emotional well-being support being something that we recognise all carers should have access to.
And counselling obviously could take place on Zoom, could be in person. Have you got views on the proportion of ideal in terms of how counselling is delivered?
So for us, the vast majority of our clients are online. And actually, initially, we'd kind of had this image of we might have like face-to-face hubs or something where people come. And the feedback was quite strong from our carers that actually being able to access things in your own home makes a huge difference. Because if you're looking after somebody and you've then got to find respite care, you've got to travel somewhere, you've got to get back again, that's several hours out of the day. And often actually finding any kind of respite care is virtually impossible. But being able to talk to a therapist where not only is the person you care for perhaps in the next room, but your therapist understands the caring situation and is able to say, oh, goodness, you're hearing this alarm going off or something. Please feel free to go and deal with that. I'll sit here and wait for you, is a big difference from what you might encounter in other therapy spaces. And so because our counsellors all really understand those pressures, it means we're able to offer something quite unique.
Anything to add, Rich?
No, just to echo all of that. I think being part of an organisation that was really set up by carers for carers means that we can meet the needs of that group because it's understood just implicitly through the team's lived experience, which is really powerful.
Excellent. Well, people like me hosting shows on leadership will often say, do take initiative amongst the circle of friends and where you are, make sure you have an influence. But the reality is that actually leading and making change is a considerable enterprise. And thank you for both of you sharing something of the nitty-gritty of that, remaining buoyant in your vision, but also reminding us that rarely would we on our own have sufficient gifts and we need that partnership. So the partnership that started in primary school is obviously still flourishing. So thank you so much to both of you. Thank you to Jenny.
Thank you for having me here. And I'm just really pleased to have had the opportunity to talk to you today.
And Rich, thank you too.
Lovely to connect again, Andy. Thank you.
And that website address again for people who are looking to connect.
So that's www.counsellingcarers.org.
Appreciate that. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Andy.
Thank you.
That was my conversation with Jenny Piller and Rich Gower about the organisation Counselling Carers. The website address, very simple, counsellingcarers.org. So do go there, find out more, particularly, of course, if you're caring for the elderly or the disabled, children with special educational needs, adults with learning disabilities, and indeed looked after children. If this conversation has raised issues for you personally, which perhaps are not regarding counselling as such, but you might value prayer, then do, of course, phone Premier Lifeline on 0300 111 0101. 0300 111 0101 in office hours, Monday to Friday. As I said on the show, it's perhaps easy for me to urge people to take initiative and make a difference. But we all have just a certain number of hours in our day and a certain amount of energy. And so it's often the case that those who see a need to rearrange their whole lives so that they can meet that need. And that can lead to thinking through the financial element. Jenny and Rich illustrate wonderfully how most of us will need others to draw alongside us to develop a particular vision. Of course, within the charity world, there are trustees who often perform that function, and many Christians volunteer as trustees and give much needed support and expertise to enable an initiative to be sustainable and to flourish. So if you are a trustee of a Christian charity, then God bless you for your labour. Of course, the enterprise model that Rich described is not the only one, and you're wise to seek financial advice as to the best course of action going forward. But I'm not going to stop urging people to take initiative. I'm emboldened by a verse that I've often quoted on this show. 2 Corinthians 9, verse 8, reminds us, "And God is able to bless you abundantly, so that in all things, at all times, having all that you need, you will abound in every good work." It may be a cliche, but it's true that God's work will never lack God's resources. So if you're considering some initiative and it has a financial element, then by all means take advice, but also continue to look to God. It's my privilege as host to curate these shows each week, and I hope you'll continue to join me in 2026. This is Andy Peck. Thank you for your company and looking forward to the next time. Bye for now.
The Leadership Show with Andy Peck. To get in touch, email andy.peck@premier.org.uk.
You've been listening to The Profile in association with Premier Christianity Magazine.